Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Good morning to you. It's Wendy Snyder in for Bob Surratt. He returns tomorrow. I like to call this segment Wendy's Hypochondriac Corner. And joining us right now is Dr. Irfan Hafiz, Chief Medical Officer of Northwestern Medicine's Northwest Region of Hospitals. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
Good morning, Wendy. How are you today?
I'm doing well in my hypochondriac trials and tribulations. I was looking over some cancer screenings, and I'm feeling a little proud because there are four types of screenings that are most important, and I think I'm on top of all these. Why don't you go over them?
No, yeah. I mean, some of the cancer screens are really important. These are the ones that are really shown and proven to be, when done at those right ages, can catch cancer really early and actually can prevent, you know, really more advanced disease. So they're really helpful. You know, lung cancer, especially if you're a smoker between the ages of 50 and 80, is really important. Breast cancer screening for women between the ages of 40 and 74. Colorectal cancer, anyone over the age of 45 should be screened for that. And for women, cervical cancer is really important over the age of 21. Getting those pap smears and all really is important to identify those problems really early.
And yes, I mean, that is key to recognize these problems early because a lot of them can be treated, right?
Very much. And I think in the past there was, you know, there's been this perception that cancers are increasing. Actually, they're going down, but we're identifying more because we're identifying them way earlier. Sometimes because of the screening a decade or even more earlier. So we're identifying much earlier stages, which are very much more easily treatable and have great outcomes. So they're definitely worth getting done.
All right. Well, that is great news to start a Monday morning with. I do have a question for you. You mentioned the colorectal screenings. That, of course, is the fun prep for the colonoscopy. And then the best breakfast in the whole world after your colonoscopy. So you said 45, but now I've been reading that colorectal cancer is on the rise for young people. Will that age be dropped down at all, do you think?
Well, it depends on the rates and what we're seeing, though. Right now, it's at that 45 cutoff. Now, this does not mean that people can't be diagnosed sooner. It is possible, but it's very rare. But the vast majority are going to be caught above between those age limits there for colorectals between 45 and 75 years of age, is that when you get those done on a regular basis, you will pick those up. Now, colon cancers are slow growing. So if you pick up those polyps at the age of 45 or so, you've probably done decades of work ahead of time.
Boy, you are like half full. The glass is half full this morning. I like talking to you. You put a hypochondriac's mind at ease, I'll tell you that, doctor. So what about people who shy away from getting the colonoscopies? There are those mail-in kits that your doctor can provide. Is that better than nothing?
It is. It is. Definitely talk to your doctor about that. I mean, those tests are good. They're not perfect, but they are definitely less invasive. However, on the flip side, getting the colonoscopy, I had mine, you know, a couple of years ago. With the modern preps and stuff that they have today, it really wasn't that bad. It wasn't really that bad at all. It's gone are the days where you had to drink, you know, gallons of these preps and stuff like that. It's really not as bad as it used to be.
And they're still using pills, right? That's what I used last time.
Pills, and there is some liquid that you do, but it's a much smaller quantity of the bottle of it. It's not there used to be a gallon of it you'd have to chug the night before. That was really hard to do, but it's no longer the case.
Yeah, well, I get to look forward to that because I'm due next year. So, all right, and there is no safe amount of processed meat to eat. I say that after eating a ham sandwich for breakfast. What do we eat?
Yeah, I think what they're looking at is that, you know, processed meats, especially, they have a lot of nitrates in them, and there's especially a lot of sodium, and that's how they help preserve the meat. So it's really looking at some of these things and other additives in there that really, you know, they don't make them the ideal meat. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't have them. I personally think that, you know, everything within reasonable moderation, but they shouldn't be the principal part of your protein diet.
So
having regular meats would that definitely be the way to go.
I had a friend who on Sunday nights would bake a turkey breast and then use that all week long, but that's a lot of prep work, or make a roast beef and then you have that for the rest of the week as well. Those aren't processed. That's probably a healthier way to do things, huh?
Definitely. And that's where I was going. You know, poultry, turkey, chicken. Beef is another way to go there. But I'll tell you, you know, nowadays, you know, especially with these air fryers and stuff, these are gotten really good. They're really easy to cook with. Not a lot of mess. And it's not just cooking. It's also the cleanup that a lot of times takes people away from wanting to do it. But having a quick cleanup definitely helps.
Will salami ever be healthy?
Probably not. It tastes good, right?
Oh, it's the best. WGN. Dr. Irfan Hafiz, Chief Medical Officer of Northwestern Medicine's Northwest Region of Hospitals. And I was reading that deaths from heart attacks are down, but there are other heart issues that we're dealing with. Why don't you explain that?
Sure. I mean, a lot of technology and awareness has really gone into improving, you know, heart attack outcomes. And so we've really seen a great decline. And this is really a testament to all the great care that's going on. However, you know, behind this, there's still other cardiovascular disease out there, especially things like hypertension, atrial fibrillation is a big one. Heart failure is another one. And these are more subtle, chronic types of heart conditions that don't create a sudden problem, unlike heart attacks where, you know, someone's having, you know, chest pain and then they suddenly collapse or so on. But these are more subtle things that can cause more long-term damage. With atrial fibrillation, you can develop clots and a stroke. With heart failure, it's just gradual weakness and fatigue and difficulty with exercise. So these are definitely certain things that, you know, your physician would pick up on a regular checkup, especially as we get older.
And a lot of people are taking statin medication. I am one of them. It has completely reduced my cholesterol level tremendously. And that's hereditary a lot of times, right?
Sure. Yes, exactly. I mean, to some extent, it is dietary. And you know, in the past, we tried to control some of it with diet. And therefore, it's still important to do that. But the statins, especially that introduction of that drug, has really been a game changer. And that's really changed the landscape of how we have heart disease, how we have that cholesterol buildup. It's helped really play a big role in reducing even the first time getting a heart attack. I'm on statins for over 15 years now, and it's really been beneficial. We have a lot of heart disease in our family, and it's really been a beneficial thing. So,
and I don't know if Bob has covered this with you in the past, but I had read somewhere that if you might be having a heart attack, that coughing is something good. Do you know about this?
I'm not exactly sure where they're going with that one, to be honest.
Yeah, it's like if you cough really deep, it's been going around on Facebook, and you got to, you know, take everything with a grain of salt. But it's like if you feel like you're, until the paramedics arrive, it's not like you're trying to, you know, help yourself forever, but until the paramedics arrive, you're supposed to cough very violently, and that does something like gives yourself compressions. Is that just not true?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how that would be helpful. There is a thing called vagal nerve stimulation, and that may be what they're talking about, but I'd have to see some more data on that one, to be honest.
All right. Well, listeners, be careful what you see on Facebook. Don't believe it. Because I am very gullible, and I'm going to the source, Dr. Hafiz. All right, and lactose intolerance, could that be giving you nightmares? What's up with this?
Yeah, this was an interesting study where they really were looking at people with sleep disorders and people who had frequent nightmares, and they did see some correlation with dairy intake and possibly with nightmares. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a causation here, but it is an interesting correlation that seems to be there. So I think this gets back overall to, you know, we've talked many times here about sleep hygiene, you know, trying to you know, not eat too much or a heavy, spicy or fatty meal before bedtime. Try to give at least 3 to 4 hours or more before you go to bed. Try to stay away from too much alcohol, caffeine before you go to bed. Things like that really go a long way in helping that out.
I will, full disclosure, I take ADHD meds and I take anti-anxiety meds. I'm not embarrassed about it. It's been life-changing. But Zoloft gives me some really crazy dreams. Is there a connection to that?
Yeah, and certain medications can do that. You can get some really crazy dreams, especially when you're sleeping deeper. When we do have sleep disorders and we don't have that REM sleep, we're not really dreaming. And when you correct some of that, then we can start to dream. And sometimes in certain conditions, it can be really kind of a little bit out there.
Oh, my God. It's like Spielberg is directing my dreams or something. It's crazy. But mental health is very important. And I am a proponent of getting help if you need it. I imagine you are as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially with sleep and being, it all ties in so well together. I mean, having that, if there's anxiety or if there's a lot on your mind or in depression, and correcting that helps with the sleep and helps with our energy and our overall health and balance there.
All right. And we have a minute left. The risks of drinking get worse as we get older, right?
Does. And this is just something to be aware of, you know, as we age, you know, our body fat and muscle content starts to change a little bit. Our weight starts to change. So how we metabolize and how much alcohol we can handle certainly changes as we age. So it's something to keep in mind and maybe, back off a little bit as we start to get a little bit older, because our bodies may not be able to handle it quite the same way as we did when we were younger.
And something you said at the very beginning of our conversation, I mean, come on, moderation is key, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely is moderation. So it's really not trying to test the limits of how much. It's really trying to keep that in moderation and understanding where our limits are.
Perfect. It's such a great time talking to you, as usual. One of my favorite segments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Irfan Hafiz, he is Chief Medical Officer of Northwestern Medicine, Northwest Region of Hospitals. There, some great information.